Today, on the season finale of The Independent, Pete and I recap Notre Dame's dominant Sun Bowl victory over Oregon State.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Independent. I'm Pete Sampson, back in my Fairfield Inn room in El Paso. Matt.
Must be joined, nice.
Yeah, you're at a different Marriott property, but in Los Angeles. Notre Dame wraps up its season with a 40-8 blowout of Oregon State, the largest bowl victory in Notre Dame history. It didn't feel like it was any closer than that. I think that Marcus Freeman, I give him a ton of credit, as I wrote about on The Athletic, for hammering home, if you're in, you're in. If you're out, you're out. That's not always the easy thing to do, I think, with coaches in 2023. When you're trying to like placate people sometimes and make everyone feel good. But I thought he did a masterful job of getting Notre Dame wired just right to kick the crap out of Oregon State, who also had a bunch of opt-outs. But Notre Dame's defense played exactly how I thought it would. If you listen to our preview pod, but the offense was better than I thought it was going to be. They ended up rushing for 236 yards. Angeli throws for 232 and 3 touchdowns. Jordan Faison is your Sun Bowl MVP, as we all predicted before the season started. I think Notre Dame, we can say these bowl games are one-offs in a lot of ways they are, but I think that Notre Dame set itself up quite nicely going into the offseason in terms of being like kind of an on-trend team for the playoff next year. And I think Marcus Freeman looks like a coach more in control of his program today as you listen to this podcast than certainly on December 1st when everyone was entering the portal. So I thought he came through the month of December exceptionally well.
Pete, if I told you at the beginning of the year, if I told you this morning, you'd be covering a game where there'd be three individual trophies handed out at the end of it. One goes to Jordan Faison, one goes to Jordan Botello, the other goes to Spencer Schrader. Your reaction would have been, what are you drinking? I'm drinking a nice Mexican lager right now. I'm at a Marriott property as well. They have a nationwide check-in down system thingy right now. So they gave us drink tickets, and I'm doing this in a random conference room I snuck into. But these are the lengths I go to for the pod, in addition to watching most of it at a Papacito's in Dallas-Fort Worth. But that's neither here nor there. It was just a game with, like, it went so much better than I thought of. I mean, you watch the first half, and it was 14-0. You're thinking it should probably be, like, 31-0 at this point.
Yeah.
It
wasn't. But the nothing felt very durable. Like Oregon State was not moving off of nothing.
So you mentioned the rushing total, and I feel this way when their games that end with safeties. So 236-2. To me, that just sounds like so much more of an ass kicking than 236-0. Like if they beat them 40-2 instead of 40-0, I think that would have sounded cooler. But the biggest drama for me late in that game was, all right, this is the only game that Kevense Hinson is going to be the head coach in. Is he going to show his inner Dino Babers and Brian Newberry and kick a field goal here to avoid a shutout? Because if so, whatever respect I had for him, and I admittedly don't know much, if anything, about him, would go out the door. I will say, in their defense, they not only went for and got a touchdown, they got the coolest two-point conversion I think I've ever seen, a direct snap to a big fella, to an offensive lineman. Even Gary Danielson said afterward on the replay, if his knee's down, I don't want to know. Like, that deserves to be in, because how often you get to see a play like that. So at the end of the day, they were able to respectfully salvage the embarrassment of a shutout, and Notre Dame's defense still could say they pitched a hell of a game, holding them below 10 points and dominating that game really from start to finish.
And I mean, you think about the way that the offense dominated the game. Their first snap, Steve Angeli's first snap as QB1, comes at the 4-yard line. And he does it with a lineup that includes 5 true freshmen. And then they march 96 yards for a touchdown. Like, it was, to be able to do that with how young they were offensively was impressive to me. By the end of the game, they were even younger defensively, because they could be. There were some new faces out there for Al Golden. But I just, every year we see, you know, bowl games are, to me, they're a test of many things. But at the Sun Bowl level and, you know, this tier, it's, do you want to be there or not? And did your head coach convince you to want to be there, or was he unsuccessful in that messaging? And I think Marcus Freeman was on point. You know, and it was, look, it, there was the contrast of watching Sam Hartman standing on the sideline with sunglasses on, I don't think wearing Notre Dame apparel at all. Like, there was a, I think, a pretty big gap between the guys that wanted to be there and the guys that didn't. And to be able to get as many guys that wanted to be there to show up, to commit to 4 weeks of prep and work that probably were not always glamorous. You know, we were in El Paso. Heck, we were in South Bend for three of the 4 weeks. To keep after it was impressive. I just thought it felt like it had the feeling of a moment where Marcus Freeman grabbed hold of the program in a different way. And that's, you know, that's Denbrock. That's a new strength coach. That's, you know, Mike Brown comes in. Boom, a 100-yard receiving performance. No problem. Just out of the gate. Jaden Thomas is healthy. Like, he's on his stuff. He's making Steve Angeli look good. It just felt like a program that was pulling in a singular direction in a way that's significant, because if they want to go where they want to, where they need to go next year, and this will, I think, be, you might disagree, but I think this will be the first year Marcus Freeman actually has real expectations to do something, to make a move with the program. And they're now, I feel like, they're more geared up to do it based on today, not because of any, you know, the box score or the score line, but just because it felt like the program was a little bit more on board with its head coach today than, you know, maybe it would have appeared necessarily at the end of the season when you're having opt-outs and transfers and all that stuff.
Yeah, Pete, I would say the expectations will be the highest they've been in 3 years under Marcus, mm-hmm. 3 years under Marcus Freeman. I don't know if I'd say it's the first time they've had expectations. I mean, think about the headspace everyone in South Bend was at with 4 minutes left against Ohio State, and they look for all intents. Like,
yeah, that's true. Thinking that's
you can and should and will win this game, and if you win this one, what can't you do? Not saying they would have won the national championship, but again, playoff in a four-team era would very much have been, you know, a realistic
I guess,
goal. Finish the job.
I guess what my point there more is, like, I think that if they had beaten Ohio State, it would have felt like Notre Dame was getting ahead. Like, that was kind of like how, not quite house money, but a little bit more.
You
like
won't get
money.
A mulligan if you lose A&M. I'm with you. Like,
yeah, next year it's like, if you didn't go 10-2, it's a disaster. And that's just that's a different place for Notre Dame to live. It's a place that Notre Dame should want to live. But I think that they're equipped to live there and have the roster to have some success. That's what I mean. Like, they've had expectations, but I just think they're different next year.
Sure.
Whereas, like, check. I mean, this year we're talking about, you know, they finished 10-3. Was it a successful season? Yeah, kind of, sort of, like, probably.
Better than last year, I mean, and you need that when you're first time to coach.
But I just don't think there's going to be any gray area with next season. Next season, it's either you made the playoff or you didn't. And frankly, it's, if you made the playoff and you host a game, you better win it. So that's, it's just going to be a different world for Notre Dame next year. But it's a world that after today, after this last month, I think, and I mentioned this on our preview pod, like, Notre Dame, which is mostly like a Jack Swarbrick commentary, has, I think, put Marcus Freeman in better position to just have success now than at any point in the last 2 years. And a lot of that is down to Marcus Freeman growing in the job. But I just, where the program is under Marcus Freeman right now, it feels much more sustainable and durable and reliable than it has in some time.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. It's definitely different than it's been in the past. And I would say, as far as the pressure part of it, you know, not that he's on any kind of hot seat, but new boss, new president, everything about Notre Dame, University of Notre Dame as a whole will be different next year. In addition to the fact that, you know, it is a 12-team playoff and, you know, we're investing in this program as such that we expect to be in that and potentially make a run in that every single year. So it will definitely be different. And again, with the way that schedule shakes out, with game one being at Texas A&M, you know, you'll feel that from the minute camp kicks off. You'll feel that from the minute spring ball kicks off in a couple of months. Yeah. Who would have thought back in January when Jordan Faison, I think, committed, if not enrolled, started off, was going to be a lacrosse player who doubled as a football player. He ends the year as a bowl game MVP. Tyler Buchner, the quarterback of the future, within a year is coming back here to play lacrosse. Just a weird, kind of funny way the sports world works in the Notre Dame world there over the last couple months. It's definitely different. But hey, you were very close on your Jaden Thomas prediction. It looked good on that for even with the phase on big catch on the first drive with that touchdown. It looked promising. It was funny watching that game on TV. Is the backdrop? It looks beautiful on TV. I will say, like,
it is. It's lovely. This it like
very very nice.
The Sun Bowl does a really nice job. I know El Paso is hard to get to, but like the stadium setting is beautiful. They do a great job with it, and it's it was a heck of a lot nicer than it was 13 years ago.
They showed the highlights and the pregame.
Yeah, as I saw folding chairs being carted around the stadium today, I sort of like got I was triggered a little bit. It brought back some bad memories, but it was
beautiful. The Sun that bad there? Because honestly, the broadcast early on was really struggling. Like Nestler's like, he's down to the one. It's like, no, you're at the six. He's like, first down. No, it's second down. Like, he was
wasn't that bad. But if you were down on the field, as I was pregame, I was like, my scalp is starting to feel a little bit warm. I need to get the heck out of here. Like it definitely felt like a place you would pick up a lot of sun, but it wasn't, there was not a glare that you couldn't see what was going on. Or that you couldn't identify the players. It's a beautiful view. They did a nice job with the stadium renovations down here since the last time I was here. It was an impressive event. And like, it was packed. I think that they changed the capacity with the renovations, actually downscaled a little bit. So it was not the biggest Sun Bowl crowd that they've ever had, but it was a sellout. And I think it might have been the biggest crowd since the last time Notre Dame was here. So the Sun Bowl, for their excitement about drawing Notre Dame, was warranted. And it was like, it was a lively crowd. It's like Notre Dame showed out. There are a lot of Oregon State fans here too, but, it felt like a bowl game that people cared about, which in this day and age, you don't take that for granted anymore. But it felt much like the Gator Bowl last year. It felt like a game that mattered in kind of a little bit of an older school kind of way.
Great Gator Bowl this year, too. I don't know if you were able to catch the end of that one, Clemson, Kentucky, out of the corner of your eye. But that was a pretty wild finish.
Yeah. I did. I saw that Clemson won, right?
They won. It was back and forth.
It seemed very back and forth. But and I saw Dabo Sweeney crowing about the stock options purchasing in Clemson. Performances like today, you're just like, how did Notre Dame just have nothing offensively in a game like that? And today you see them, they're creative, they're moving the ball around, they're moving the pocket, they're running the quarterback.
Two big ingredients.
They're sneaking the quarterback on fourth down.
Missing or added here. The quarterback and the offense coordinator were different.
Yeah, it felt like much more of a go for it mentality. Like, I hesitate to use the term addition by subtraction. I think that's the term or the phrase. But I just think like Notre Dame cut loose a lot more today with Angeli and Gino Guidulli calling plays. Faison and healthy Jaden Thomas too.
When have you seen them air it out like that on the opening drive against, like, not Navy, like a Power 5 team?
They tried it at Duke. Tobias Merriweather almost got it on the first drive, but it's rare. I feel like that was more of like a Tommy Rees thing. Like, sometimes they get aggressive on the opening drives of games, just like,
but
test the
like
ball,
this year,
test
there was deep. None of that. I felt like,
yeah, all. Very rare, very, very like, rare.
I think if you didn't watch the game and you looked at the box score and you saw Steve Angeli, 14 of 18, 212 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks, 27 rush yards, you'd probably think they didn't ask him to do a whole lot. Like, it was a lot of check downs to the running backs. It was tight ends. It was this and that. No, the guy averaged 15.1 yards per completion. Like, he ran a full offense today. He looked really, really good. I didn't have expectations for him one way or the other. I didn't think they put that much on his plate. They would put that much on his plate. But he looked like a guy, and he sounded post-game like a guy, like just very like stoic and mature. You know, he definitely was not overwhelmed by the moment whatsoever, which be very easy to do that, especially in a stage like this where, frankly, there isn't that much pressure unless you are Steve Angeli and you realize this might be your only shot, like to really audition, as they call it, a Power 5 quarterback. And I thought
it was funny. I did too. It was funny post-game, like, I think somebody asked a very long-winded question of him about, like, and preface, like, you were marvelous today, and then asked the question, and Steve was like, marvelous, huh? Like, thanks. appreciate it. Like,
by the way, not to belabor the Miller Moss comparison. Literally, Miller Moss, when he got the trophy, the MVP trophy at the game this week, Joel Klatt, I think, said he set his stat line and he got the trophy. He said, "You forgot I threw an interception too." Like, you left that out there. Like, very similar. Like, no one believes in a chip on our shoulder, but like, all right, who are these guys? Like, we all know about Sam Hartman, yeah. Caleb Williams. Like, great opportunity in games like this for guys like that to, if not solidify their future at the current school, show the rest of the world that they can play football.
Yeah, I think that's 100% on Angeli. And it's like, he was asked about, like, well, do you know Riley Leonard? And he gave sort of a short but respectful answer of like, I've met him, cool guy, we'll see when he gets here. And then he was asked a little bit about next year, and he says, like, look, he's well aware this could be a one and done situation as far as being Notre Dame's starting quarterback. And I'm not saying that he's okay with it, but he knows that that is a reality there. And I got a text from somebody who has worked with Angeli, which I thought was an interesting stat. And it was, since playing quarterback in competitive tackle football from fifth grade to the present, Angeli's teams have won every game he has started at quarterback except one. And that was his junior year at Bergen Catholic, when they lost on a Hail Mary pass on the last play of the game. Like, I don't want to say he's got like some just like winner moxie it factor, all those like intangibles that, you know, we write about but can't ever really define, but he's been successful. And that is going to serve him well, whether that's at Notre Dame as a starting quarterback or whether that's somewhere else as a starting quarterback. Because I think that what you saw from Steve Angeli is somebody who will be a Power 5 starter. I just don't know where that's going to be.
Here's the thing, if you're him, and I don't want to belabor this point and turn this into a whole, you know, thing about his future, but you watch a guy like that play today at this level and you think, all right, this guy has a chance to not just start but succeed at Notre Dame. Obviously, there's a numbers game we can all play in our head with Leonard coming in, Carr coming in, Minshew still on the roster, et cetera, et cetera. There's nobility in that. And again, I don't think there's a wrong decision here. You have to ultimately look out for yourself. If you have any doubt whatsoever about whether it's the intentions of the recruiting department, your coaches, whether you'll have a fair shot, et cetera, I would look at the guy on the other side today and Ben Gulberson, who won 10 games last year, won a bowl game MVP, and got demoted to third string this year and threw a single pass all year long until today, when he was playing with essentially one arm time behind his back because he had nothing to work with whatsoever. Like, I'm not saying Oregon State did him wrong by any stretch of imagination. That's just the nature of the beast at this level of football. But if you're a good guy and you think you could and should play at a high level, and I would imagine Steve Angeli feels that way about himself internally based on what we saw externally today, you've got to look out for yourself and find a place that will get you on the field sooner. That's just the reality of the situation right now.
Yeah, I don't know what his sort of like in his inner monologue there. I would think that to me, it would make sense to stick at Notre Dame through spring practice, like give it a, like compete.
Sure.
I know Notre Dame has a ton invested in Riley Leonard.
Buckner stuck till spring last year. Whether he was always going to leave or not, I don't know, but he did stick till
the
spring.
The gap between Buckner and Hartman, to me, is probably a lot bigger than it is between Angeli and Leonard after today. And so if you're Angeli, like, compete. You got a new coordinator you can learn from who just coached Jaden Daniels. Like, that's something that would be of value to anybody. And then go from there. Because, like, also, if you get through spring practice, you can kind of get the lay of the land about what the quarterback position looks like outside of Riley Leonard. Because if Riley Leonard's just here for 1 year, are you better off sitting one more year, learning the system? You've already got experience. And then giving it a shot a year from now in the spring. And if you lose that one, then you can bolt as a grad transfer. Like, I don't, it's just, he'll have a lot to figure out, but these are good problems for him to have, because I think he will be in demand. I don't know if he'll be in demand right now, but that guy's going to play college football somewhere and probably have a decent amount of success doing it. You know, the rest of the offense, you know, Jadarian Price and Jeremiah Love in for Audric Estime. I thought that Price had Love's stat line, or what I thought would be Love's stat line rushing, but Love's touchdown catch, where, I mean, he made, I think, three or four guys miss. Like, that's the kind of material that Notre Dame is going to be working with at running back next year. The offensive line should be better than it was today when I thought it was fine. But it's just like, you don't cobble that together in a month and just like, oh, I hope it works out. That's a position that needs to cook. There should be a lot, whether it's Leonard and Ajeli. I mean, then you're adding Bo Collins. You're adding
Mitchell.
The guy from, Mitchell, Chris Mitchell from FIU. You may be adding Jeremiah Hunter from Cal. Who knows? Maybe they'll add a tight end. I don't know. I doubt it. But you may add an offensive lineman. The offense, especially with Mike Denbrock stitching it all together, and I think in a very professional and just sort of coherent way, they should be good in bigger moments next year than they were this year. And and Freeman referenced that post game. He's like, look, we have to figure out how we play better in the tougher games and then also win all the games we're supposed to win. Like, well, they did a pretty good job of winning all the games they're supposed to win this year with kind of a half exception at Clemson. Louisville, they just ran into a buzzsaw, and Hartman was Hartman that night. But it's offensively, it's not going to look like LSU 2019, but this should be a good offense next year. I mean, they should have the pieces to put together an offense that can go to Kyle Field, that can go to the Coliseum at the end of the year. That can outscore some people when they need to, on top of obviously the defense is going to be what it is. So I think if I was Mike Denbrock, I would feel pretty good about what my roster looks like after today and seeing these guys sort of get out there and do it with Kaduli calling the plays.
One of the best parts of starting the Independent podcast was a chance to pick the brands we wanted to work with, and Roback was at the top of my list. As the owner of multiple polos, hoodies, Q-zips, and shorts, I can tell you the quality, fit, and feel is unmatched. You've probably seen Roback on Audric Estime, Kyle Hamilton, and Michael Mayer. Or maybe you saw the dozen Notre Dame fans wearing the Shamrock polo at the Central Michigan game last weekend. I can tell you I saw Roback gear in Dublin earlier this year. While the gear hasn't made me quite that athletic as those Notre Dame football players, Roback is my go-to on the golf course, heading to the lake, watching my kids' sports, or just walking the dog. So make sure you're comfortable throughout the season with Roback. Use code IRISH for 20% off your first purchase. That's code IRISH for 20% off all hoodies, polos, Q-zips, and more.
I would definitely feel better today than I did before today, just having seen proof of pudding out there. The other stat that really stands out, just scouring the box score now, that I don't think we mentioned, probably not surprising, but it's still monumental if you ask me, to dominate time of possession, 40-23 to 19-37 in a Ooh. Game where you're scoring as much as you are is really, really impressive. I just thought the offense was really clicking all cylinders in the second half, and they moved the ball well in the first half. It was about the best case scenario I think you could have hoped for if you were Notre Dame entering a game like this one. It went well. I wasn't sure how the back rotation would work out. I just knew it would work out because they've got so much talent back there. I think we figured that coming into this season. I remember week one, week two, we're talking about, look at Dylan Edwards on Colorado, as great as he is. Like, do they really need him at Notre Dame? And not to say you couldn't ever use a big playmaker, but like, they're stacked running back. They really don't need any more bodies there. And, it was interesting watching the CBS broadcast. I don't think they've done a Notre Dame game since the Georgia game in 19. Nestler referenced calling a number of Marcus Freeman's games as a player back when he was at ESPN. But this was the first one he did of him. But early on, I think he said Jabran Price on the carry. There were a number of, and even, the trophy presentation, they butchered Spencer Schrader's name wrong.
Now, Schrader's Schroeder. A starter.
So he's a kicker, but he is a starter. But it was one of those games where I think even the most devout Irish fans have to like recheck the box score and be like, all right, who is this again? And I think that's true of every fan of every program everywhere this time of the year, because there's so many mixing and matching and moving parts
right
with these rosters come bowl games. But I thought, they hit all the right notes. I mean, you had an offensive line out there that had just one starter who had started all year long in Pat Coogan at left guard. You had new tight end. Receivers were what they were, but they ended up having their best game collectively as a group this season, the best individual effort we've seen from someone this year in Jordan Faison. By the way, did you see, he just texted us right now. He was all over the broadcast. Did you get to catch up with our friend of the show, Tim Murray? Because he did just text us saying, Notre Dame's last two bowl game MVPs will be members of this year's lacrosse team, which is actually a pretty funny stat.
Who did you think took the picture of me with Tony the Tiger?
I'm surprised he didn't sneak in and just make it a selfie.
Yeah, no.
How was Tony? Was he nice? Nice guy?
He seemed nice. Like, it's kind of hard to read his face. Very stoic that way. But, I was like, Tony, I got to get a photo. And he's like, yeah, sure, no problem. Seemed very pleasant. That was the way I was like, I want to do this. But if Notre Dame wins like 27-24 on a walk-off field goal, I'm definitely not doing that. However, they won 40-8, so it felt kind of appropriate. That was a nice box to check. That I started the season in Dublin interviewing Joe Montana at the Guinness warehouse, and I ended it with a photo of Tony the Tiger and stepping over the cereal that had been dumped on Marcus Freeman on the sideline.
This is going to sound like cheesy and poetic, but I swear to God, this is true. So I connected through Dallas to get to LA today. I had some flight trouble, but I managed to watch all the game across two planes and Papacito's in Dallas. Outside of Papacito's, two gates right next to each other for flights. One was going to Dublin, one was going to El Paso. Where the season started and where the season ended. I kid you not.
That's fantastic.
This felt very on brand for the way the season has gone. So
it was a journey. There's no doubt about that. It's wild to think about, like, this is still probably something that Freeman has to get sorted out. Like, the highs can be very high and the lows can be very low. It's still feels a bit volatile. And like, and maybe today leaned into that volatility a little bit. Like, just because you played well doesn't mean it's like not volatile. Like, they were very up today. How do you take that and repackage that 13 times over, 14 times over? Heck, I mean, Freeman was feeling himself so good after the game. Somebody referenced, like, well, do you think about history repeating itself? The last time Notre Dame was in the Sun Bowl, they went to the national championship game the next year. And I was like,
it's not true.
I didn't want to raise my hand and be like, no. The question felt like, was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? And Freeman was just like, I'm rolling with it. And he's like, forget an appearance. I want to win the damn thing. And I was like, okay, all right. We're all feeling good here post bowl game here. But it was just the whole thing. Post game, it is a reminder that for how much bowls may mean less than they did 10, 15 years ago, they still mean an awful lot. I mean, it wasn't like Notre Dame.
They mean
a lot. If there's a difference between,
I don't believe it, but
yeah, they're different. There's a big difference between meaningless and just meaning less.
Yes.
If you get what I mean. Because the game still mattered a lot to Notre Dame, which is like, I think the only way that you win 40-8 against a Power 5 team that's going to be a Group of 5 team a year from now. But that's a compliment to Notre Dame. Like, to make mediocre teams look bad is a skill as a head coach. Brian Kelly did a great job of that for the most part. Marcus Freeman is doing a good job of that now. So, you know, making, you know, performances like today more of the standard and sort of maybe exercising out some of the volatility that we've seen over the last 2 years, that's a kind of one of the June conversations I want to have with him. I don't really know how you learn to do that. How you learn to be less emotional and maybe a little bit more even keel. Cause I do think like that emotional aspect of it is kind of one of his strengths as a coach,
right?
But You gotta make sure it doesn't lead to a blind spot or a weakness at the same time.
Well, I think there are two parts that are semi-attached to that. One is, I would argue, the up and down nature of these past two seasons on the field. I would argue off seasons were similar, and it seems like that smoothed it out. Right? Like, there were, like, especially your first full off seasons, all these recruiting highs. Oh, look, let's take photos of Dante Moore on campus. We're going to get a 5-star quarterback.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, it's signing day. We just lost a bunch of guys because we don't know what we're doing with NIL. Well, a year later, all that's changed, right? And you're not seeing that bumpy road. Everything's been pretty stable in that department since June or July. So I think that part of it is very important. And I just think you got to be who you are, right? I mean, I think the emotional part for him is part of his strengths. And I think he's, you know, whether it was Clemson last year or USC this year, they tapped into something there that going into those games, none of us on the outside saw happening. Not to say they couldn't have won those games, but to perform the way they did on those stages after some pretty disappointing performances in the lead up to them, I think were very, very impressive. So, you know, I also wonder, we'll learn more about this in due time. This isn't my forte, but you now have a new strength coach and a full-time strength coach. That, one way or another, is going to set the tone for everything you do next season.
Yeah.
It'll be out of sight and out of mind.
And I'm sure everyone will be posting selfies
with shirts off before and after the way they did Built by Bayless. And it'll look good. It'll look good on Instagram. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. But, like, you know, how are they next November? Right.
Yeah. Yeah. How durable can they be? That will be interesting to me. It's probably the thing I'm least qualified to, like, comment on, because I just don't know anything about high level strength training. But I just think that aspect of it should be good. The more I dig into Lauren Landau, the more I'm intrigued by him. Is like, I can see where this fit could be excellent for Notre Dame. It's a little bit more of a bespoke training regimen than maybe a one size fits all. I'm not saying that what Bayless did was bad, because it definitely wasn't. But it's a huge part of why Brian Kelly got the program turned around in 2017. But Lauren Landau now becomes the head coach of Notre Dame football starting, what, January 16th, right? Roughly. I mean, whenever they get back from winter break. So there's still some things to get sorted out. I mean, in the transfer portal, do you still want to add there? Do you want to enhance what you're doing, or have you seen enough at the receiver position that, like, maybe you're good with two incoming guys instead of three? Because then at that point, somebody feels like they need to leave and go somewhere else. I don't know. There's a lot. I just feel like Notre Dame goes into the offseason with a ton of potential and the wind at its back, in a way that the week after the Stanford game or 2 weeks after the Stanford game is a major change from where the vibe around this place at that point. So that's, head coach has to navigate storms of all kinds. They just don't happen on game day. Sometimes they happen in the off season. Sometimes they happen in the postseason. And I thought Marcus Freeman did a nice job of getting Notre Dame from a somewhat rocky point A to point B in El Paso here, and blowing out Oregon State.
It was brought to my attention today, if Brian Kelly loses to Wisconsin, he'll have the same record through 2 years at LSU as Marcus Freeman does at Notre Dame through 2 years. And technically speaking, we'll have lost two offense coordinators to Marcus Freeman during that time as well.
Yeah.
I don't think
that is something. Maybe LSU at Notre Dame next year, the college football playoff. How about that? Opening round game?
That'd be fun. That'd be really fun. I mean, going down there would be fun too. I've never been to a night game in
Death Valley. I have not either.
It sounds pretty fun. Not going to lie, as far as new experiences go. But I tweeted something to this effect during the game. I did enjoy Gary Danielson a lot more than I thought I would. And it's going to be very interesting hearing him being a full-time Big Ten guy next year when CBS, you know, officially doesn't have the SEC anymore. But he had a funny line in there. What did he say? I tweeted, how about New Jersey quarterbacks this year? Tommy Cutlass, DeVito, and Stevie Peanut Butter and Jelly. I was tempted to say Tommy DeVito is a new favorite Notre Dame player from Jersey, because as anyone who watched the Giants-Eagles pregame last week knows, he grew up as a big fan of Carlo Calabrese, and who didn't? Angeli's Bergen Catholic and DeVito's Bosco, those are very heated rivals. I don't think we'll be seeing those two break bread, no pun intended, anytime soon. But it was fun to hear that line, and it was fun to see Steve Angeli take off. Jersey guys don't slide, I think Danielson said as well. He played with some.
Maybe some should strong. Have though. On the oh, yeah, I don't know about the hurdle. About Let's skip they the talk. Hurdle, but I mean, it, like, it was what
all games are for trying new things.
Yeah, it's all about experimentation. I do think on the 2nd and 15, he took off and got 17 and, like, really slammed into somebody. I have to say, like, I thought Steve Angeli, the passer, was pretty much like what I thought he was going to be. But the ability to get on the move, they moved the pocket a lot more. It was a lot more creative there. And the toughness in the ground game was a upgrade from where they were the previous 12 games. I did not see coming.
And again, I know it's a one-off, but, like, Notre Dame quarterback who ran the ball like that, you know? Like, Golson was a good runner, but he was a fast runner.
I mean,
Ian Book, you're right.
Ian Book had a real toughness to him when he ran.
God, we always forget, right? Everyone always forgets.
To the point he had basically a lacerated kidney in the Northwestern game. And, like, Sam Hartman had that moment at Duke where it was just pure desperation. Steve Angeli was the aggressor on the ground. It wasn't reactive. It wasn't desperate. It was something he had to do. He just went out there and made a play. So I was impressed all around with Steve Angeli. Passing game, run game, mobility behind the line of scrimmage, post-game comportment, the way he handled questions about Riley Leonard and next year. I don't think it could have gone much better for Steve Angeli. I know they had some delay of games and the operation wasn't great, but you have to give a new quarterback some grace with a new offensive line, new running backs, new wide receivers, all sorts of new stuff. So I thought he was excellent. He came out looking fabulous or magnificent, I think is the question. Marvelous? No, marvelous. Marvelous, magnificent, whatever. He was quite good.
Did you vote for him for MVP?
I did Faison just because I thought it got the offense on track. His speed was a little bit different. I could have easily been talked into Angeli. I like Javonte Jean-Baptiste for defensive line MVP.
I don't know if they mentioned it. I feel like they mentioned the broadcast MVP, and that's why I was expecting to see Angeli get up there before they announced Faison. But I don't think there's a wrong answer there. I'm always surprised the quarterback doesn't get it, but yeah.
Yeah, I was a little surprised. I thought Javonte Jean-Baptiste is the defensive line MVP over Botello, but they were both good. And then I voted for Josh Burnham as special teams MVP since he was the guy who sniffed out the fake punt that I think Kiefense Hinton said only half jokingly was the worst play call in college football history. But if you're going to run a fake punt, and you sort of do this like quick huddle on the sideline where you're like whispering and like conspiring, that's just not the time to do it, guys. Like, that's just don't do it when you have to get together on the sideline to call the play. It's got to be a little bit more in the flow of the game. And man, Marty Biagi sniffed that out in a hurry and it looked real bad for Oregon State.
There's been some, like, you look at the bowl game MVP history of Notre Dame. Like, they had an offensive lineman win bowl game MVP.
Who will be a first ballot NFL Hall of Famer.
Yes. Oh, no, he was great. It's just you never see a lineman win MVP. I thought Tommy Reese would get it. It was his college finale. He played a good game. Nope, it goes to the left tackle.
I think Malik Zaire got it. I was going to say Malik Zaire got it without starting the game.
Did he not start? No, he started, right?
No. Maybe he did and both did played. Play I don't know. Yeah, you might be right.
He had to start it. I vividly remember him like bawling after the game. Like, that was a big moment for him. I feel like he started because they yanked Golson in that USC finale. I do remember that. Buckner won it last year while throwing two pick sixes. That one didn't really make any sense to me.
Notre Dame's offensive coordinator also didn't understand that last year.
So there's always some quirky little bowl history and trivia that comes along with this. Hey, you know, as the AFLAC trivia question, if you're watching the broadcast on your second screen, Pete, four Heisman winners have played in this bowl game before, including Jaden Daniels for ASU a couple of years ago.
Ooh, all right.
That should have been the magnificent the lead into Freeman about Angeli as far as bowl
future Heisman Trophy winner.
Exactly.
Yeah, didn't get to hold his feet to the fire about like whether it'd be Steve Angeli's job next year. I'm not sure how he would answer that, but the way that Lincoln Riley had answered about Miller Moss, and like, look, I think in the preview pod, I was like, there's no way, and heck, they're gonna ask Steve Angeli to do what Miller Moss did, and they didn't, but it was a lot closer to that than I would have thought, right? Like, it was.
Yeah, it's a different offense.
He did more than manage the game. I thought they were going to ask him to do.
The first half, the way they ran that ball, and we were on a group text meeting during this saying, like, yeah, they could just run all over them all day and get out of here, and, like, this game could be over by now. They they let Steve Angeli go to work without getting away from their bread and butter. I thought it was struck a healthy balance in a game where, let's face it, they were never going to lose. I mean, you saw after that first drive, like it was the A-team versus – it was not the A-team. You know what I mean? It looked like the varsity versus JV out there. The Oregon State group of second stringers, including the interim coaching staff, just did not have what it took to hang with this Notre Dame team today. And I thought Notre Dame did a good job. The coaching staff did a good job of building a game plan that leaned into those strengths while allowing Steve Angeli to show what he can do. And I thought he showed as much as humanly possible under these limited circumstances.
Yeah, I thought he came out looking great. Faison came out looking great. Price, Love. Charles Jagasaw, I thought, played well. I'd be interested to go back and watch the game tomorrow. Sort of focus in on the offensive line. The fact that Jaden Mickey played at all, the death of his mom, I asked Benjamin Morrison about that post game because he had Mickey written on the tape on his wrists. That was a heartbreaking thing to witness, to see Jaden Mickey play through that. Overall, the defense really rallied together. I thought it was a good show of camaraderie on the roster. If the guys who were in it were kind of in it for each other, not in it for themselves. And I thought that showed on both sides of the ball, showed with the young guys, showed with some of the older guys, whether that, was a first time starter or someone going through a personal tragedy. Some like Steve Angeli, not sure if there's going to be a job for you next year. It was an impressive amount of focus. We talk about the future on this podcast all the time. That's what college football is. We're always talking about what's going to happen next. So I give credit when a team can focus on what's happening right now, because this would have been easy to think about what's next, what's coming, whether the job's going to be there, what's the roster going to look like, what the coaching staff's going to look like. And Notre Dame didn't get sucked into that on Friday against Oregon State. And to me, that was impressive.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Mickey, I woke up to that news this morning like everyone else, and it was just very, very sad. And yeah, credit to him. Thoughts and prayers with him and his family. I know that's something that he's been pretty public about throughout the course of the season, the Pittsburgh game in particular. Very, very sad, but I'm glad for him he was able to play, and wishing him and his family the best moving forward. On a much lighter note, these bowl game, post-game bats, I mean, some of them are pretty exotic. This one seems like the most enjoyable one in the world to go through if you're a coach. I mean, cornflakes without milk, doesn't stick. It's light. It's on your head. I think maybe the Gatorade bath after that caught him off guard.
Yeah. Well, I think that was key. You can't do Gatorade and then Frosted Flakes, because then it does stick. I think the order was very important there. That was apropos that the two guys that got Freeman with the Frosted Flakes were Michael Vinson and DJ Brown, which were two of the stand-in captains.
Well, his nickname is Milk. He has to have milk.
Yeah, right? That's a good point. And then, Javonte Jean-Baptiste, I think, was part of the Gatorade, or maybe it was an ice bucket, which could be painful. Marcus seemed to brush that off just fine. But, it did not live up to the complete absurdity of the Pop-Tarts Bowl post-game. Which is, I don't think another bowl should even attempt to approach that. But I liked the cereal bath, the tiger running around with a leprechaun, two great cereal spokesmen, both for Frosted Flakes and Lucky Charms. It was a nice post game. You could tell that Notre Dame didn't feel like they won the national championship, but it wasn't like, okay, can we get out of El Paso either? They savored the moment, which they earned the right to do for the work they put into to create it.
There's a video going around. Oh, God, I wish I remember who tweeted it. It was on a text somewhere of the Pop-Tart last night running around, set to Creed's Take Me Higher, just like the Thanksgiving performance from Cowboys years ago. Oh, my God, so good. Look it up, listeners, on Twitter. It's out there. It's hilarious.
This is the best
part. Yeah, right. Like we kept saying, meaningless bowl games. Well, they keep the marketers behind these things keep finding new ways to capture our entertainment in ways we did not know we needed to be entertained.
Who are the ad wizards who came up with this one?
I'd never heard of Duke's Mayo before the Duke's Mayo Bowl. I mean, I hate mayonnaise, but the bowl game seems great, and it's a great, great PR stunt for them. I do love Pop-Tarts like anyone else, and that was a fun trophy as well. But Tony the Tiger, I love Frosted Flakes too. And if I were coaching one of these games and I had to get bathed in something, Frosted Flakes would probably be the path of least resistance in there.
Be high on the list for sure. Well, on that note, I don't know if you have anything else to chime in about the Sun Bowl or Frosted Flakes or general breakfast confections, but it was a very effective and I think meaningful end to the football season for Notre Dame today, to beat Oregon State 40-8 to avenge its bowl losing streaks to teams with OSU, which is long running.
And Oregon State in particular.
Yeah, Oregon State, Oklahoma State, and Ohio State. To get the win today to finish 10-3, I think is significant. Marcus Freeman said as much post game, and it's better to win a bowl game than lose a game, obviously. But I think that the 8-month runway that you get into next season after winning out the way that you did, is valuable for Notre Dame, whether it's recruiting, whether it's for NIL donations, whether it's, getting the facility shovel in the ground there. Like, it all helps. It all matters. And I think that Marcus Freeman should feel, pretty satisfied about where the program is heading into the true offseason.
Year 23 on the beat for you, my friend. Complete. What's the record during that time?
I'll have that ready to go on the next podcast. But yeah, that was.
What's their bowl record? What's your bowl record?
Minor bowl games, quite good. Major bowl games, obviously bad. I was trying to think. I think they might be 7-1 in minor bowl games over the last 8. But it's the major ones that matter now, and maybe next year they'll get a chance to right that very bizarre wrong, not having won one since 1993, which is well before I started covering Notre Dame football. So
not that long. Well, it'll be interesting how we measure major and non-major bowl games in the 12-team playoff era. But
win a quarterfinal. It's like win a quarterfinal. I feel like is what
or first round on campus. Yeah, on-site playoff games are gonna be freaking awesome next year. Like
it's gonna be a good time.
It's gonna be so cool. I hope it snows well somewhere, and it's awesome.
Yeah, well, we'll have many, many episodes of The Independent between now and Notre Dame's debut in the 12-team college football playoff. Let's just call it now. That's happening. Wow. So plenty of episodes between here as we record on December 29th and I think December 20th next year, maybe the 21st. I don't know the dates, but was looking
first round, I believe today. The first round game, I believe, is the 20th. There's one at night, and then there's the next day.
20 or 21st. So we got about 51 weeks between now and then. So plenty of podcasting to be done.
One game at a time, one pod at a time.
Plenty of writing to be done at The Athletic or The Inside Zone. Subscribe to both, read both. So until then, he's Matt in Los Angeles. He gets to cover the Rose Bowl coming up in a couple days, which will be fun. I'll be watching that from my couch back in South Bend, but we'll not be podcasting afterwards.
Media days tomorrow here, full rosters, full staffs, Mike Elston, Tyler Buckner, Tommy Reese. I'm sure there's some other guys with ND ties that I'm forgetting about. This is our last post-game episode of the first year of The Independent as well. And speaking for myself, and I believe Pete, this has been much more of a success, at least early on, than I thought it would be. Numbers-wise, early on, especially last week when we went live, when Mike Denbrock got hired, you guys came out in numbers on a holiday weekend. Thank you. Looking to do more with you guys in season, out of season, live shows, meetups, etc. Please send us any suggestions you may have. Also, shout out to our producer, Mike Wolf. He took a chance on us at the beginning of the year. Today's also his birthday, and I can't think of a better way for him to celebrate his birthday than by staying up all night editing a podcast of me and Pete talking about Notre Dame, Oregon State in the Sun Bowl.
Thanks, Mike. We appreciate you. We appreciate you listeners, as Matt said. Well said. So on that note, we'll wrap up this episode of The Independent. Thanks for being with us. As always, you can find our podcast on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube to follow along. We appreciate all the listeners, viewers we picked up over the season, and we will be back. Hey, the offseason is just around the corner. So
we'll be back soon.
We'll be back soon with that. So thanks for being with us, and you've been listening to The Independent.